Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Aaron provide helpful tips on how to get ready. Ready or not, here comes Ready Radio.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio. And this morning, you know, Aaron and I are in studio and we're going to be talking a little bit about waste. Looking back at this last week, there's been some talk about government waste and talk about how we can be, you know, better prepared through conservation. You know, there's some news out of China that they're going to be capping carbon limits. There's all sorts of information floating around about how to be more conserving and trying to be more prosperous through conserving. But what came to my mind this last week was a story that I had heard about the amount of food that Americans waste. And apparently, food, and I'm not talking about like food scraps. No, we're not talking watermelon rinds and orange peels. We're talking about, you know, food that was left on the plate that was perfectly edible food that just was wasted. Food is the number one item that is thrown away in this country. It surpasses not only paper, but plastics and every other category of waste that gets thrown out is food.
And it ends up in the dump.
And this is
a sewage system, depending on if you have a trash grinder in your sink or not.
And so here's a whole bunch of food that is being wasted every year. I don't remember the exact numbers, but there are hundreds of tons of food wasted in the U.S. every year. And this is it's a multi-billion dollar problem because the amount of food that is wasted, if it had been, you know, properly utilized, would have saved billions of dollars in the American economy, tons of food. And we talk about, you know, we hear, you know, the First Lady talk about people, you know, going hungry in the U.S. and we have to make sure that people get proper nutrition. And
well, First Lady is part of the reason people are going hungry in the U.S. Have you seen school lunches lately?
Well, that's an interesting point because that was one of the things that I had in my research that I had turned up, that people during school in the school lunch programs are throwing away massive amounts of food because the kids don't want to eat it.
All of a sudden, you know, there was no problem getting the kids to eat the pizza and chicken nuggets of our generation, and I don't see where it really hurt us that bad.
That's right.
But now we have Michelle Obama, and she's got this program of healthy eating for these school kids, and so basically what they get is a piece of rye toast and a couple of raisins on their plate, and they won't eat any of that.
Yeah, and then when they don't eat it, it all gets thrown away. And so, you know, there's a massive amount of waste going on in food in our country, and this is a huge problem. A lot of people don't think of it as being a huge problem, but when you start to look at global resources and, you know, who's getting what, the amount of food that we waste in this country could sustain thousands of people. And we have people who go hungry in the U.S. every day, and they're not getting the food they need, but we're wasting so much.
You know what I saw on the news the other day? It's kind of off topic, but a little bit on topic.
What?
This 90-year-old man and a couple of ministers were arrested for feeding the homeless in a park.
Mm-hmm. I had seen that story come up on Facebook.
And I'm like, when did it become a crime to feed someone?
Well, you know, I can understand kind of the philosophy behind it because when you kind of attract people then who are in desperate need. You have the homeless who realize that they can get free food here or they can get free shelter, then they start to come. And if your city doesn't have the resources to handle an influx of homeless people who are looking for a handout, then what are you supposed to do? If you cut off their ability to get free items, then they go elsewhere.
And so basically you're insinuating that if you feed one homeless person in downtown Atlanta, that they're somehow going to send off a signal like honeybees?
From my own personal experience, you know, there was a point in my career that I worked retail. This was back a long time ago, and I knew from experience that if when you'd have homeless people come into a store, if you would give them free samples or if you would give them some money, the next day 10 more would show up, and the day after that 20 would show up because the word would spread. That
the only thing I can think of right now is that episode of South Park where all the bums are begging for change, and there's just more and more and more of them until the whole city's infested.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody gave them one of them a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's really like that.
Well, my personal experience is that it is kind of like that. Not to, you know, catastrophic degrees, but that, yes, people do know that where the soft touch is. I mean, you see this even when I worked up in Alaska, Anchorage was known as being the city where people could get free handouts, and you didn't see the homeless people flocking to Soldotna or to Seward, but they were all over Anchorage. In fact, there was this huge homeless community in the woods around Anchorage where they had set up a tent city and were there because they knew in the wintertime that they would be taken care of.
There's a pretty bad, or not bad, a large homeless community in British Columbia, Canada,
mm-hmm.
where you cross over at Niagara Falls to go into Canada from Lake Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
And my uncle used to go over there frequently. He thought it was pretty cool to drive across the international boundary there and go to Starbucks for some reason. I'm not really sure why.
This is Canadian Starbucks tastes better.
So anyway, they would be pictures. He would take pictures of homeless people holding signs, and they would say, basically, give me a loonie or a toonie, and a loonie is a dollar coin, and a toonie is a $2 coin.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take pictures of them and send them to me. I thought it was kind of weird that there were so many of them, like, right at the international border. They figure us Americans come in and have money, and we're soft touch.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, here we are with so many people who are in need. And Atlanta has an interesting problem with homeless people being aggressive, that they'll actually chase people around. And this was during Mayor Shirley Franklin's reign that this became a really prominent problem, and that it was detracting from tourism because people were afraid to come to Atlanta for being chased around the city by homeless people demanding money, which, you know, I would actually think would be a crime. But apparently it wasn't viewed that by the incumbent party at the time. So here we have people who are afraid of being panhandled. And so the solution was to put up these red parking meters. And so instead of giving money to a homeless person, you could put money in this parking meter and turn it and then feel good about yourself because you gave money to the homeless problem that the city was going to take care of.
Right. That money pads some politicians' pockets. Doesn't help the homeless problem. Or how are they helping the homeless problem? Locking them up?
Well, what they did with the money is they created a special bank account, and all the money has been deposited into that bank account, and it has never moved.
So there's this, like, huge bank account.
Well, it's not huge. It has $4,000 in change in it.
Oh, wow. I was going to say.
Over 15 years.
Only $4,000, that's all people have paid to park?
It's not for parking. They look like a parking meter, but it's a special feed the homeless meter. You put the money in that, and the money goes to feed the homeless.
Nobody cares about feeding the homeless to put change in. $4,000 in how many years? 12?
15, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's like...
See, they should take that and have, like, a homeless banquet with it.
Well, in New York City, a prominent Chinese billionaire threw a homeless banquet. And the idea was he did a big press announcement that he was going to have a homeless banquet. They were going to have it catered by the top restaurants. There was going to be all free food for anyone who came, and that all the homeless people were going to get $100.
And you could, like, dress like a beatnik and go down there and everybody would think you were homeless.
Well, When he came to actually do this, the homeless community, not the homeless people, but the people who help the homeless, were there causing a huge racket and demanding that he not give out $100 bills to all the homeless people.
Because we don't want to help feed their alcohol and drug issues.
That was the exact point that was made. And so
it's okay to give them food.
In the end, he only gave $100 to one homeless person who was carefully selected, and then the rest of them caused a mini riot in the banquet hall. So, you know, we're looking at waste and what we can do to be better prepared. And this, you know, this kind of all ties into emergency preparedness, because you look at the way people react when there's a shortage or when they're hungry. You know, the homeless people there were expecting to get a handout, dare I say, a government handout. And when they were stymied, they started rioting. We've got people who are trying to do good and help people, and they're arrested. You've got the government solution is to set up a system of parking meters that go nowhere, and the money that's collected goes nowhere, but it makes you feel good about it all the time. And this is just the intricacies of the way...
It's like a wishing well.
It is.
You know, you see these wishing wells are even at the Chinese restaurant. Where does that money ever go? Do you think anybody ever collects that money?
I don't know.
Now, I've seen in some of the malls where they had, you know, they used to have all the fountains in the 80s and 90s. Uh-huh. People would throw money in it, and I've seen those malls sweeping the money out of them. They take some kind of broom type thing and sweep it all the edges and collect it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a lot of those donated that to the children's hospitals or in their area.
Or other local charities.
And I thought that that was a good thing. But a lot of these wishing wells, you know, people throw their coins away and never even consider. And in bigger cities, I always wondered if, like, the homeless ever dug around in there for change for, like, their booze.
Have you ever seen the movie Despicable Me 2?
No.
Drew's daughters are at the mall, and one of them is sitting on the edge of the wishing well, and the other one comes up with a snorkel and has a big pile of coins and sets it on the edge of the well. And the little girl who's sitting on the edge says, "Are we supposed to be doing this?" And the other one says, "Well, my wish was to get a whole bunch of coins," and went back under the water. So, yeah.
This is wrong.
It was very funny. My kids love that movie. It's a pretty good movie, all things considered.
Yeah, they're having a new Minions movie coming out.
I heard that next summer, the Minions only movie, yeah, instead of a, like, bigger plot.
The origins of the Minions and everything. It's supposed to be pretty funny.
They're Twinkies, aren't they?
No, they're not Twinkies.
They look like Twinkies.
Of course you would see food.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't help it.
Anyway, so speaking of wasting food and Twinkies that never go bad in the apocalypse, as proven by... So, you know, we waste a lot of food in this country. We have a lot of people who are in need who could use this food. And the problem is that we have this mindset. And the mindset is that there's always going to be food here. Folks, we're coming up on a commercial break. We will talk a little bit more about the mindset of waste when we come back. You are listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. Before we took the commercial break, we were talking about the mindset of waste. And I think that this is something that's really important because, you know, we talk a lot about emergency preparedness and having all your supplies and being ready. But simply being conserving, simply taking better care of what you have is a preparation in and of itself. And if we as a nation could save billions of tons of food through just a little bit of proper planning, I mean, isn't that a great way to further, you know, meeting people's needs, further saving money, further being prepared for an emergency? Because as they say, a penny saved is a penny earned. Well, some food saved is also food earned, right? Because then you don't have to buy as much and your stores last longer. So this is a great concept that I think that people need to rally behind in the emergency preparedness community, but it doesn't seem to get a lot of traction. And you know, there's lots of ways that you can stretch food and without going into rationing, just being conserving and not wasting.
Well, there's also the point of what can you do with the leftovers? You know, you're like conserve. Well, the way I conserve is different than the way most people conserve because I'll make a huge pot of soup or a huge pan of lasagna. And if it doesn't all get eaten, I like to put it in smaller containers and freeze those,
mm-hmm,
and then take them to work for lunch.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, another great thing is
it
to utilize
money from having to go out to eat, and it uses leftovers without them going to waste.
Right. And that's a great way of conserving, you know, food. But so many people just, you know, dump it into the trash.
Well, and that's a horrible waste. If you're not going to eat your leftovers, then don't make as much.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, still, even if you are going to toss them, don't toss them in the trash. Make a compost heap and use that on your garden the next year, because that is one heck of a fertilizer, all that leftover food.
Well, let's talk about composting, because that's something that I'm interested in, but I don't have a lot of practical experience with.
We have, since I was a child, had a compost heap. My father was very interested in using this on the garden, and everything went in it from yard clippings, you know, where you run the lawnmower and all the grass goes into the little bag. He would back the lawnmower up over there and dump the bag into the compost heap and it would compost. And our watermelon rinds, corn cobs, leftover bits of food that we didn't eat would go in a bucket. Some people used to use that as pig slop.
Mm-hmm.
He dumped it onto the compost heap. And then every few days he would go out there with a pitchfork and kind of turn it a little bit so it would kind of all start to rot together and turn back into dirt, because it does kind of turn back into dirt. And then when he would plow our garden in the spring, he would spread that over the garden and plow some of it under. and it would work great as a fertilizer. My dad grows the biggest tomatoes I've ever seen in my life. And I seriously believe it's because of that compost heap.
Well, you know, I've the first time I ever went fishing, I caught a fish and it wasn't good for much of anything. And my mother buried it underneath of a magnolia tree that we were going to be planting. And that fish gave that tree just a boost of life. It turned into a huge, beautiful, gorgeous tree. And, you know, where my family is not known for having green thumbs, and I credit the fish. And when I was watching the Charlie Brown special for Thanksgiving that was on just recently, there was a part where they were talking about how they were growing the maize. And of course, you know, Squanto was there saying, you know, catch the little fry that are in the river and put one with each little pile of corn that's growing so that it'll have food for the corn to grow. And so we see that, you know, having food for the food helps it grow to be better and more productive and have good fertilizer.
Very important to have those nutrients in the soil. Sometimes you don't have enough nutrients in the soil, and your plants just don't get the nutrients they need, therefore they don't grow to the size they need to really produce. You can plant tomato plants in a bucket with some of your potting soil like you would plant flowers in, but unless you fertilize that the right way, you're only going to get a few tomatoes off of those vines. Now you plant those in the dirt, and you do the same thing with that compost that you've been saving for a year or two. And we're talking, it's leftover, raked up leaves, it's grass clippings, it's coffee grinds. By the way, coffee grinds are incredible fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
It's little bits of meat that was left over, bits of rice, corn cobs, shells, eggshells you can feed back to your chickens, or you can put those in the compost heap. But all of this put in together and mixed up, and you grow your tomatoes in that, and your tomatoes are huge.
And now, as I understand, compost also produces heat. Is that correct? As it decays,
it does. So you have to be kind of careful about what you put in there. And that's the reason you kind of stir it too, is to let it mix up. But yeah, you can have a little spontaneous combustion in there if you're not careful. Those grass clippings, you don't want to leave. You want to leave them laying for a couple days before you rake them up with the mower and dump them out. You want to let them dry. It's kind of like hay. When you rake hay, have you ever seen them cut hay?
My grandparents had a hay field and did that four or five times a summer.
That hay has to lay in that field after it's been cut for two or three days and dry out before you can bale it up, because if you don't, it'll spontaneously combust.
Well, it also starts to decay because it'll rot because of the moisture in it that can't escape.
But I've actually seen a hay bale catch on fire.
Wow.
Because of it. Yeah, it's kind of like those greasy gas rags in your garage.
So do you think that there's a way to harness the heat that's produced by a compost pile? I mean, is there some way that we could use a secondary to warm something else above it that would, you know, to capture some of the benefits of this?
I don't think that there's really enough heat for you to want to capture. You know, this kind of brings me to the topic of those heaters that are candles and terracotta pots.
Mm-hmm.
This thing floats around Facebook every fall, and everybody's like, oh, man, that seems like an easy, cheap way to heat. But if you really look at like how many lumens come off of one tea light candle, and how many hours one tea light candle burns, how many square feet of heat or cubic feet of heat you would get off of that in BTUs, it doesn't really even make sense for it to work.
Right.
And it doesn't work. Everybody says, well, I warmed my bathroom with it. Well, if your bathroom's a 3-foot by 4-foot space, maybe.
Well, any well-insulated enclosed space is going to feel a slight temperature increase from any kind of activity. Even if it's just some people in there talking. I went to a meeting this last week, and we went into the meeting room, and the person who was leading the meeting says, wow, it's chilly in here. And then somebody else says, well, don't worry, we're going to have 15 people blowing hot air in here in a few minutes. So, you know, you can warm up a room, a small enough space, with just about anything, even human activity.
Political meetings always do that, don't they?
One of our staffers just brought me in a couple of interesting notes here. The total amount of food last year that was wasted by the U.S., this is food, edible food that was thrown away, is 222 million metric tons.
222 million metric tons. And I would say a lot of that is thrown away at your local Golden Corral.
I would say a lot of it is thrown away through restaurants and grocery stores. Grocery stores throw away a lot of food rather than because it reaches its sell-by date, even though it's still good for another couple of weeks. They try to mark it down, people don't buy it, and woof, there it goes, out to the trash.
A lot of the grocery stores are now donating all that stuff to local food pantries.
There has been a backlash that people say that if it's past its expiration date, that they can't accept it anymore because of federal regulations. I mean, that used to be a major outlet for it because they could take it as a tax write-off. But now they're saying that since it's past its sell-by date, that it's not edible or not fit for human consumption. Therefore, people can't have it, which is ludicrous. When I lived in Alaska, we would routinely buy expired milk because it was so much cheaper. You could get it for only $6 a gallon instead of $12 or $15.
You just gotta drink it in 3 days.
You just have to drink it within a week. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's perfectly good milk. But now that there's this conception that the sell-by date is the throwaway date, and that's really changing the way that food is handled. But here's the interesting statistic that I really wanted to get out to everybody. So how many metric tons of food are thrown away in the U.S.? 222 million. How much food is produced in sub-Saharan Africa? This is everything below the Sahara Desert, the entire continent of Africa. How much food is produced last year?
Enlighten us.
230 million metric tons.
So we could literally
feed all of Africa, with what we throw away. Think about that. Isn't that ludicrous? We throw enough food away to feed the entire continent, well, almost, the entire continent of Africa for a whole year.
So, I'm sorry, I've got to make a cruel joke. Are you ready?
Ready.
Feed a cold and starve a fever, Ebola.
Ebola.
Over there, folks.
Well, I think that this is just horrifying. I mean, when you start to think about what we as Americans are wasting, it's a horrifying concept. And if we just were a little bit better stewards of the bounty that God has provided us in this country. I mean, we make enough food that we support a good chunk of the rest of the globe with our exports, plus the food that we keep for ourselves, plus apparently enough food to feed Africa from just what we throw away from our table scraps. Remember when your mom would tell you there's some hungry child in Africa who would eat this if...
And I told her to send it to them, and she washed my mouth out with soap. Is that the instant you're talking about?
Wow. No, well, I didn't know quite all the ins and outs of that story.
She made some horrible soup one time. It had, like, cabbage. And our mother cannot cook. She really cannot cook. My sister and I both rave about her garbage soup. It's everything that was in her refrigerator that really should have gone in the garbage because it was growing hair.
Ew.
And she'll dump this all in a pot and use ketchup as the base. And she told me, there's kids in Africa that are starving that would love to have it. I said, send it to them.
There was a little bit of truth to that because what we throw away was be enough to feed all of those starving kids in Africa. Folks, we're coming up on a commercial break. You're listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. During the commercial break, Aaron and I were talking a little bit about Ebola again, in which, you know, she was cracking jokes, but it is a very serious topic. And I mentioned that the latest patient that was brought over from Sierra Leone has died. It was a good doctor who was trying to fight the good fight over there, but succumbed to the illness. And I heard this morning that we are now adding a fourth country to our intensive screening list, even though I think it was Mali, even though we don't actually receive direct flights from that country. They are now having confirmed cases of Ebola, so we're now screening any passenger that flies from Mali through another country to the U.S.
There's good news.
So, I mean, the world just keeps bubbling. Excuse me. The world just keeps bubbling along, and people need to be aware of everything that's going on out there. You know, there's Ebola, there's the political conflicts, there's all of these things going on. And here we are at home, wasting food left and right.
And you are sneezing in the studio. I'm going to have to bring my Tyvek suit in next week. I'm really worried about your Ebola over there, Doug.
Yeah, I don't think that sneezing and...
You know what I've got? I have realized that I have contracted a disease.
Called
Fearbola.
Fear, yeah.
Fearbola.
There we go. So... As you know, we look at startling statistics that America throws away enough food to feed all of Africa. We look at some of that there's over 30 million So, okay, hold on a second. Let me look at this wonderful statistic that our staff brought in. Since 1960, food waste made up less than 10% of total waste in our country. Less than 10% in 1960. Now we're up to 25%. One quarter of all waste in this country is food.
Okay, so in 1960, how many fast food restaurants did we have in this country?
I think there was McDonald's and Carl's Jr. and that wonderful song about Ray Kroc making the milkshake machines. That's about it.
Okay. How many buffet restaurants did we have in this country?
I don't know. I wasn't alive back then. You're predating me by about 20 years.
Buffets are a pretty new idea, kind of started in the casinos and then moved out into the normal world.
Well, it's a good Minnesota thing because you have the smorgasbord where everybody has a little something and you get to pick what you want. Don't you know?
So you guys practice gluttony, don't you know?
Amen to that.
Gluttony. So anyways, you know, I think that a good portion of the difference between today and then is a lot of your American family sat at home every night and had dinner as family all together.
Well, I think the biggest difference between 1960 and now is that most American families had somebody who stayed home to make dinner and who had invested effort in that dinner and knew what their family would eat and knew what, you know, was the right proportion size to make for things.
I've been a working mother a very long time, and I've always cooked dinner for my family. So I think that the women that say, oh, well, I work a job, well, baby, that's a cop-out, because there's such a thing as a crock pot, and you can throw some meat over in there, and your family can have that dinner even if you're not with them.
Well, that's commendable, but I don't think that many people have that kind of work ethic. And I think that kind of work ethic is found primarily between or among preppers now, people who understand that a penny saved is a penny earned and that it's better to make things at home where you know what's in it and that it's more valuable to have things that, you know, you've done with your own hands. You know, these are basic Jeffersonian principles that we talk about every week, but they're not traditional values anymore. These are kind of oddball values that people don't espouse and people don't take seriously.
You know, amongst the preppers I know, I've noticed a trend. And there's a few people that don't exactly fit into this mold, but for the most part, I'm going to stick my preppers in a mold and I hope I don't offend anybody. But a lot of us grew up on or around a farm. We grew up around agriculture, or we grew up around some kind of homesteading. We saw somebody canning or cooking or sewing. And we realized
whether it was mom or grandma
valuable
or
skills, right? And these, we realized these are valuable skills that are dying. So we get up into the real world. We get out into the rat race.
Welcome to the real world, she said to me condescendingly.
Yikes.
Take a seat. Yeah.
But they get out into the real world and they go, "Wow, this is horrible. All the food has chemicals in it, and the air is full of smoggy whatever." I've seen Atlanta on a warm day.
Yeah.
It's scary looking down here on a hot day.
It's scary looking on a rainy day, especially after driving it. This last week, I mean, my goodness, Monday, did you see traffic?
Oh my gosh, it was backed up. But I was on 75 that morning. It's like 11:30. And it was backed up all the way to like Wade Green.
Yeah. It is kind of the real world. Like you said, the real world is kind of a scary place when you start to get into the way food is made and the way we live. I mean, people live like rats piled together in apartment complexes. They live off fast food. They scurry.
It's called Super Size Me. It's a documentary. There's this guy.
Morgan Freelock.
He ate fast food, nothing but McDonald's, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 30 days. And at the end of those 30 days, he was dying.
Yeah.
His liver was shutting down. His kidneys were shutting down. He was in real bad shape.
But
he had
But I've seen the opposite side where people ate nothing but McDonald's for a month and lost 40 pounds. And
that's baloney.
That's not. There are people who have done this. And all it is how you make your choices on what you eat. And what he ate was garbage all the time. He ate the supersized fries, and he ate the double quarter pounder with all of the mayo and goop on it, and yeah, he gained weight. But if you eat like the chicken wraps with the lettuce and tomatoes and a little piece of chicken and the tortilla, and if you eat, you know, diet drinks, and if you keep your calories down,
I think diet drinks will kill you.
I'm living proof that they won't for at least 33 years.
At least 33 years. I was diagnosed 2 years ago with fibromyalgia because of those diet drinks. And when I stopped drinking them, my symptoms went away because I had aspartame poisoning. And these are the chemicals that you're pumping into your body, and you're recommending our listeners to pump into their bodies, Doug King. Shame on you.
Well, I think that it's better to drink diet drinks than it is to ingest 500 or 600 extra calories.
I would rather drink unsweet tea than drink aspartame.
Well, I can go for that, too.
I would rather drink water with lemon in it than drink aspartame.
But it's kind of hard to get sometimes. There are some people who it's hard to get them to drink things that don't tickle their taste buds in some way. And if you're going to have a choice between, and I agree, unsweet tea may be better. Water is best of all. But for those people who, when you say, here's water and here's a Coke, which you're going to take, and they always reach for the Coke, it would be much better for them to be reaching for a Diet Coke than to be drinking 600-700 extra calories.
And see, if they say to me, here's a water and here's a Coke, which one are you going to reach for? It depends on the situation and how much Coke I've already had. If I already had a Coke or two that day, I'll reach for the water for the rest of the day, or I'll reach for the unsweet tea for the rest of the day. You know, I moved down here, and to me, this is the Deep South, and y'all have some sweet tea. When I say sweet tea, can I have a little tea with my sugar, folks? I mean, seriously.
You mean the tea syrup gets to you?
The tea syrup, it makes my mouth hurt. I've never had anything make my mouth hurt like this before in my entire life. So I go into the restaurants here and I order half sweet and half unsweet because, folks, that's the way we drink it up home.
Yeah, well, that's normal. The thing,
I'm from the South. I mean, where I come from is still considered the South. I'm from the Bubble Belt, but boy, is it sweet tea here.
When I go to Sonic, I like to order tea from Sonic, and because you can get things added to it like blackberry or peach or something like that. But I always have to make real clear, unsweet tea, add peach, because otherwise
peach syrup has enough sugar in it
to make the whole thing sweet. And otherwise you get the tea sludge, and I know we're making fun of a Southern institution of sweet tea here, but
I'm not making fun of anything. I appreciate the fact that somebody can enjoy that. I just can't.
As a dessert.
It's not something that I was raised with. And so I'll take half sweet and half unsweet together. Well, the waitresses here don't seem to understand that. They think that if they bring me just straight sweet tea, that I'm not going to be able to tell the difference. And I'm here to say, yes, I can. And when I complain about it, they're like, no, I mixed it half and half. And I'm like, don't lie to me. No, you didn't.
Because if you double the strength of this, it would crystallize.
You could make rock candy out of it.
Now, that would be interesting. Would rock candy made out of sweet tea collect some tea flavor to it as well?
It would. That's how they get those different colored flavored rock candies.
So we could make sweet tea.
So you get the watermelon candy flavoring.
Uh-huh.
You can get all these candy food flavorings on the candy and cake decorating aisle at Walmart in the craft department.
Uh-huh.
You get the candy syrup, and it's like an oil, and you mix that in with that sugar water. And I mean, it is some strong sugar water. And then the container, you have to have a lid with holes in it, and you run strings through that. And you put a fishing weight on the bottom part, but not the lead.
Not a lead one.
Not the lead part. But that holds it down in the water, and the sugar will crystallize to these. But as it crystallizes, it does bring flavor with it.
Well, that's very interesting. So you can make sweet tea rock candy, and probably with some of the restaurants around here, you wouldn't have to add anything to the sweet tea to be able to make
sugar it. Sugar to tequila. You could make tequila rock candy. I've seen it done. When I was out in Texas, they had tequila-flavored rock candy.
Interesting.
I thought, yep, treats for all the children. Here, have some candy and go to sleep.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we would never actually recommend doing anything like that. But, you know, we're coming up on another commercial break. And in our final segment, we're going to talk a little bit about our sponsor, True Prep, and, of course, the product of the week and ways that you can get in touch with us here at Ready Radio. But I think that this has been a very interesting discussion today because we do waste a lot of food. We waste a lot of everything. Everything that we use, if you have a mindset of preparedness, you should be looking at it as ways to reuse and recycle it and keep it going, not only for sustainability purposes, for, you know, the good of the environment or the good of our nation or saving money, but on top of all of that, just being creative and exercising your mind to be putting everything to its fullest use. You're listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio, and this week we've been talking about waste, which is a broad topic, but we brought it home in the context of the amount of food Americans waste off their plate every day. And one way that you can be, you know, a more responsible person is to make sure that when you're cooking at home, and cooking at home is the best way to you know, take care of your family, to keep them away from preservatives and artificial things and high salt content and have better quality food. All of this feeds into the idea that you should cook at home. And if you're cooking at home, then cooking, you know, proportionally, cooking quantities that you know that your family is going to eat are important, and making sure that it's good food. And one of the ways that you can ensure that you're having the best food for your family is to follow a good recipe from somebody who, you know, is responsible and cooks with good ingredients.
That brings us to our product of the week.
The True Prep product of the week. That's right. And what are we spotlighting this week, Aaron?
This week, I'm going to spotlight the series of books that are cookbooks by Ree Drummond, who just happens to be the pioneer woman.
Oh, I love her cookbooks.
I
when we lived in Alaska, all the time we'd go to her website and get her recipes. And you can go and get a lot of her recipes off of her website so you can try something out and see how valuable these cookbooks
have
would be.
Have you had her Apple Brown Betty?
I have not.
Oh, my gosh.
But I've had her country fried steaks, and those are amazing.
Her barbecued meatballs are really good, too.
Oh, I love a good meatball.
Who doesn't?
In fact, Maybe when I leave the studio today, lunchtime on a Saturday, it'd be a good idea to swing by IKEA and get some Swedish meatballs.
Oh, gross. Why do that when you can make them at home for so much better?
Well, there's always a convenience factor, especially.
One of these days I'm going to make some Swedish meatballs and bring them into you.
I would enjoy that.
You'll be sitting here eating them like a dog with your just face in the bowl.
So what other good recipes are found in these cookbooks that people should, you know?
Oh, Ree Drummond. She has the best chili that I think I've ever seen a recipe for. However, the best chili I've ever had just happened to be Doug King's chili. Holy moly.
Well, that cook-off I did a couple of weeks ago was rather successful. I am proud of my chili recipe. And the chili is another good thing, you know, talking about food that you can have for leftovers, because the chili improves every night that you let it sit.
Well, you know what else you can do with chili that a lot of people don't realize you can do?
Put it on a hot dog.
You know, I'm from West Virginia, and we didn't call it chili. We call it hot dog sauce. Just a little tidbit of information.
Okay.
No, you can it. You can actually put it in mason jars and pressure can it and seal it for later. So if you make a huge pot of chili and only half your family's only going to eat half of it, pull out a few quart jars and can it.
There you go.
And you don't even have to stick it in your refrigerator or freezer long term. It'll keep for 10, 20 years.
And using your all-American pressure canner you picked up at True Prep, I mean, this is a great opportunity. Folks, we've got a lot more to talk about, and it seems like time is running short. I just wanted to mention really briefly, not only can you swing by our title sponsor at True Prep over at 1000 Cobb Parkway North and see all the wonderful products and get some great advice from them, but you can visit them online at trueprep.com. That's www.truprep.com. And while you're there, drop them a line, tell them that you heard about them on Ready Radio, or you can talk to us as well. We're always looking for people who are going to join in our upcoming trivia contest show, which will have great prizes. You can send Aaron at erin@readyradio.net an email if you'd like to be a contestant. Just simply tell us, you know, what your expertise is and how you think that you would be able to compete in a live show about prepper trivia. Also, you can reach out to me at doug@readyradio.net or doug@kingslawoffice.com if you have any questions that you think that I would be able to help you with. You can contact our webmaster at info@readyradio.net if there's things you'd like to see on the website. And our website, of course, is readyradio.net, where we have all of our old shows archived, as well as feeds from our Twitter and Facebook account, which are other places that you can keep up to date on everything you need to know in your prepping world as far as news and information, helpful tips, and strategies that you can implement. So with all of that said and done, you know, we're talking about canning chili with a pressure canner and being able to put up food and store food, not waste as much. You know, there are a lot of ways that you can keep the harvest. Dehydration. I know that I love to use my Excalibur dehydrator. If there's anything that I can harvest and I can dehydrate and put up, or, you know, throw into a mason jar with an oxygen absorber to help keep it fresh.
There's good ways of doing it. You know, before they had dehydrators, they used to lay things out in the sun.
Sun-dried tomatoes.
Sun-dried tomatoes, yes. And my grandfather used to tell me about them sun-drying the peaches on paper up on the roof.
Wow.
They would climb onto the roof and lay the paper out on the roof and lay the peach pieces out on the roof and let the sun dry, and then they would climb there and flip it.
Huh.
Can you imagine being on the roof all day as a little kid? Now, he was probably 8 or 10 years old.
Well, there's a lot of things that people used to do.
Defects would take you away from your parents if they had you do that now.
What about, like, just watching The Patriot, where the children were playing with tin soldiers? You know, that tins in the tin soldiers wasn't really tin. It was lead. Yeah. So, you know, there's lots of things that were commonplace, and either we know better now or we don't know enough anymore. I don't know which in some cases. But, you know, we try in this show to get people interested in concepts of self-sufficiency, of taking care of themselves. And it seems like the idea of conservation has been captured by one political party, when really this is a human interest across the board. I mean, people need to take care to not waste. And it's not about trying to save the earth, because the earth will go on with or without us one way or another. And
you know, I've got to interject here for a second. I hear so much baloney about climate change.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to say to our listeners, if you want to believe in global warming, that's fine and dandy for you. But we don't have enough historical data on the weather to make an educated statement of whether our climate is changing or not.
Well, I heard that there was consensus among scientists that it is. So isn't that enough?
No, there was a consensus among scientists that the Earth was flat at one time.
Well, there's a consensus among North Koreans that they found a unicorn lair.
And they've been to the sun. I mean, come on, just because it's the popular idea for the time era doesn't mean it's correct.
And global warming or climate change or whatever moniker they want to slap on it now is the popular idea right now. And we're seeing this start to take an influence, you know, economically, because of all the steps that we're taking to decrease carbon emissions, when CO2 is being produced by every living, you know, animal on the planet.
If they want to decrease the carbon emissions, they need to plant more trees. That's what the trees are here for, is to filter our air.
Well, the biggest producer of carbon emissions are volcanic activity.
And cows, methane gas.
Don't go after my cow now.
Eat more beef.
Beef is too expensive as it is. You know, folks, these are very important things. And, we talk about such weighty issues every week. And here's something that you can do at home that can make a real difference. And a real difference for your wallet, a real difference for the economy as a whole, a real difference for you as a family, and a real difference for people around the world. Because if we're wasting less food, then that food can go into the global system and produce more full and happy people around the world. And when people aren't living a day-to-day subsistence lifestyle, when people have enough food that they can think about what to do next, that's when real change happens. You
take
know,
that leftover spaghetti and freeze it. Take the leftover chili and can it. Save that food for later. There may come a time when you're glad to have it.
Exactly. And here we are thinking about, like, the Arab Spring. You know, that the Arab Spring happened because of food riots. The price of food had gone up because of the price of energy had gone up. And when the energy prices went high, Americans started taking their corn and turning it into gasoline ethanol. And when that happened, that caused the price of food worldwide to skyrocket, which made people start to starve to death in Saharan Africa, which we could have fed easily with just the scraps we threw off of our place. But instead, there starts to be riots, and the riots lead to global political upheaval, which has Gaddafi fall and Assad is threatened. And the next thing you know, there's a rise of a new militant Muslim Brotherhood who calls themselves ISIS, and now we're sending American troops to die. And here we are involved in a foreign war, all because of us not having because of the spike in energy prices, which led us to decrease our exports of food, whereas we're throwing away enough food to keep all of these people happy without a question. I mean, isn't that just an interesting juxtaposition of calamities that led to where we are now politically?
Well, do you feel like we should give them food just to make them happy?
I feel that we could, if we were more conserving of our food, and we looked at it as a natural resource rather than just a given, and we took care of our food and properly maintained our food supply, then we could export more food for profit. But because we'd be exporting more food, there'd be higher supply with no greater demand, which would cause food prices to fall. When food prices fall, then people in other countries can buy food cheaper. When they buy food cheaper, then that frees them up to do something more than subsistence living. And that allows them to stretch themselves and to be more, and to talk about medicine and philosophy and arts and culture and build up and to create. And people who are not starving create. People who are starving destroy. And that's the fear that I have if we go into some kind of Great Depression. When you get food lines and people are starving and they're looking for their day-to-day subsistence every day, they don't have the ability to think higher or think broader or do more.
Yeah, I have to disagree. People that are fed can be very destructive as well. If you haven't noticed these riots that are going on.
Well,
there's people look very hungry to me, but they look pretty angry.
There are a lot of reasons why people riot. I'll give you that. But you know, creating a system where food is available for the whole world, and we have the ability to produce enough food. You know, there are people who talk that we need to have population reduction because we can't meet the global demands for food. We absolutely can meet the global demands for food. We just have to look at it as a resource that needs to be managed, not just willy-nilly and letting all of this go haywire. Folks, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160. We'll see you next Saturday right here. Enjoy your weekend.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Aaron get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday mornings at 8, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.